Hello and welcome to this Helpcast brought to you by flyingwithoutfear.com. I'm Captain Keith Godfrey and may I welcome you aboard. In this Helpcast I'm going to be talking about turbulence. Now I know that turbulence is probably the most common reason for a fear of flying, so I'm going to talk about it in some detail and from several different viewpoints. I'm going to talk about what causes turbulence. What effect does it have on the aeroplane? What it's like to fly an aeroplane in turbulence, and then finally what you, the passenger, can do about it. But before I go into detail about it, I want to reassure you that flying in or through turbulence is a perfectly normal thing to happen to an aeroplane. It's no different from a boat moving because of the waves, currents, or tides. And in fact, that's quite a good way of thinking about turbulence. Turbulence is caused by waves and currents, not of water, but of air. Now, although I say it's perfectly normal, that doesn't make it any more comfortable, and flying in turbulence can be uncomfortable, and is occasionally very uncomfortable. And if you don't understand what's happening, then it can be very disconcerting. Just for a moment, let's think about being in an aeroplane while it's in turbulence. Certainly it's uncomfortable. The overhead lockers creak. Things get bounced around. The cabin crew make a clatter when they stow their trolleys. The pilots put on the seatbelt signs. The seatbelt signs interrupt your sleep or movie. And the pilot makes an announcement for your safety. Goodness, you say to yourself, I didn't know I was in danger until the pilot said that. So what happens? Up go your anxiety levels and those of all the passengers around you. The next thing that happens, of course, is when the aeroplane lurches, 350 people all go, ah, together. And certainly this is not an environment that would persuade you that turbulence is normal. So, when you're in this situation, what should you do? The first thing to do is snuggle down into the seat and pull your seatbelt as tight as you can bear it, and make a determined effort to relax. Think of something that you'd describe as nice or pleasant or happy, and with your eyes closed, concentrate on that single thought. If your concentration does lapse, say to yourself, turbulence is uncomfortable, but that's not the same as dangerous. Remember that I said turbulence can be uncomfortable. Turbulence can be very uncomfortable and disconcerting. But be confident that the aeroplane isn't moving around as much as you think it is. It certainly is not dropping thousands of feet. So the next thing we'll talk about is what is turbulence and what causes it. What does cause those waves and ripples and currents of air in the sky? Well, in fact, it's quite simple. If you think of how much heat comes from the sun, you can imagine how much it heats the ground. And certainly at the equator, it heats it more than it does at other latitudes, and certainly more than it does at the north and south poles. This means that the ground, the countryside, and towns around the equator get hot. The hot ground heats up the air above it, and that hot air rises. And we know it does that because that's how a hot air balloon works. When that air rises, it has to be replaced by air from somewhere else. And I'm sure you've guessed it, on a global scale it's replaced by air from the polar regions. And so round and round the air goes, from the equator to the poles and from the poles to the equator. Meanwhile, the same thing is happening on other land masses. The ground, say in Europe or America, Australia, wherever, heats up too. Not as much as at the equator, but certainly more than the air in the seas and oceans nearby. So again, the air goes up over the hotter land masses and is replaced by air that was previously over the sea. So the world has air moving to and from the equator, and air moving sideways across the world, from the land masses towards the sea, and from the sea towards the land masses. When these enormous chunks of air collide, there's turbulence, like two currents of water hitting each other. And the next time you have a chance to see rivers meeting or a river going into the sea, see all the ripples and waves at the edges. That's turbulence. And the same thing happens in the sky. And that's what we call turbulence. But of course there's more to it than that. Air heats up over smaller areas than continents. It heats up, for example, over towns. And from those little bubbles of air that form over the towns, they break away and float upwards. And if you happen to be flying along and fly through one as it's going up, you'll feel it as a bump. And of course, if you fly through a bit of air that's replacing it, that's going down, you'll feel that as a bump too. But it's interesting to note that the bumps that make you go upwards are far less disconcerting than those bumps that send you downwards. And let me again remind you that the aeroplane isn't moving anywhere near as much as you think it is. If it moves half the height of an average room, then it's moving a lot. And I can confirm this because in the cockpit I can see the altimeter, which measures height, not changing at all. These local areas of turbulence are shown by the little fluffy white clouds that you see on a typical summer's day. They can, of course, develop into bigger clouds, and, with the right circumstances, they can build up into thunderstorm clouds, but the circumstances have to be right. There's no question that an aeroplane will fly through the larger forms of these fluffy white clouds. It's illegal for a start, and it's too uncomfortable. The weather radar on the aeroplane will show the precise location of these clouds, and it's very easy for a pilot to divert around them. The weather radar can show the area of weather ahead of the aeroplane for a distance of up to 150 miles. It's therefore very easy for the pilot to make a small adjustment to the heading to avoid these areas. So far then, we've seen that there are at least two ways that make turbulence. First, it's caused by the air swirling around the planet, because of the difference in temperatures of the air at the equator and the poles and over the land masses and the sea. The other form of turbulence so far are the bubbles of air that break away from smaller areas on the ground. As you might expect, though, there are still more reasons for turbulence. Imagine a strong wind blowing against a mountain range and consider the air rising up on the side of the mountain. Actually, it might be easier first to imagine a windy day in the city. We'd more than likely describe it as blustery. First the wind is light, then suddenly there's a gust, then it blows strongly for a while. In fact, the wind's all over the place. Why is this? It's because the wind has to get around the buildings, and sometimes the wind goes through the gaps between the buildings, and other parts of the wind get slowed down by the buildings. All in all, the wind is not smooth and steady. Once again, like a river or a stream which bubbles and burbles around the rocks and stones in its way, this is what happens to the air. If you were in a boat, the cause and effect would be obvious. But the same thing is happening in a plane, even though it's invisible to you. And here's the big thing about turbulence. You can't see the wind, you can't see the ripples, so you don't really know what to expect. The crew do, of course, but they're used to it. The chances are that you're not. And of course, this makes you feel anxious. So now, if you imagine a wind blowing against a big mountain range, you can see why it causes turbulence. But in aviation, we make allowance for that too, because there are minimum heights that we fly above mountains, not only to keep clear of them, but to avoid the effects of the wind. Let's move on to another cause of turbulence now. When hot and cold air masses collide, and the reasons why they collide are not appropriate here, but when they do, the warm one rides up over the cold one, and the rising air gets jumbled up and causes turbulence and clouds. But what do you think would happen if the cold air forced itself under the warm air? Then, of course, the air is even more disrupted, and that causes greater turbulence. The thing is, you don't need to study meteorology to understand the causes of turbulence. Just remember these two things. It's normal, and it's air currents and waves for whatever reason. It's now time to talk about the effect that turbulence has on an aircraft. And the short answer is none. It bounces it around, of course. It makes it uncomfortable for us, the occupants, but it doesn't actually affect the aeroplane. An aircraft having flown through turbulence will not be any different from an aeroplane that hasn't. It doesn't stretch or suffer dents. It looks and is normal. Very, very, very occasionally, and by that I mean maybe twice in my career, an aeroplane might fly through severe turbulence. If that happens, then the aircraft is required to be checked. But more often than not, there's no damage to it at all. You know, of course, that an aeroplane is built much stronger than it needs to be. And indeed, I know of no aircraft that has been taken out of service because of damage sustained because of turbulence. From a structural point of view, an aircraft is able to withstand all the forces and more that are caused by turbulence. Incidentally, during turbulence, you will see the wings flexing. That's like the suspension on a car just smoothing out the bumps. And when you see that happening, don't be alarmed, just say to yourself, that's normal and it's making the flight more comfortable for me. An aircraft has a design speed for flying through turbulence, and on entering the area of turbulence you might hear the engines throttle back as the speed is reduced. Say to yourself, that's normal too. It's time now to talk about what it's like to fly an aeroplane in turbulence. From a pilot's point of view, it's quite simple. In fact, there's no difference between flying an aeroplane in smooth air or in turbulent air. The difference may be similar to the one of driving on a normal road compared to a rough track. The aeroplane or the car moves around a little bit more, so you work a little bit harder. And to tell you the truth, the average pilot doesn't even think about it. It's just flying an aeroplane. The aeroplane, as you would expect, responds in the same way as it does when the air is smooth when you're flying in turbulence. You don't have to make bigger movements of the controls, you probably just have to make more of them. It's true to say that in the gustiness that occurs with turbulence, the speed does vary. But you'll be surprised to know that it's probably not more than 1 or 2 miles per hour. When flying in turbulence, it would be normal to leave the automatic pilot engaged. It has no difficulty in flying the aeroplane. From a pilot's point of view, when we're flying in turbulence, we often speak to pilots at other altitudes, and we use the expression, "What's the ride like at your level?" meaning, "What's the turbulence like at the height you're flying at?" Then, when there's sufficient distance between aircraft, air traffic control will allow aircraft to change height to avoid and minimize the turbulence. Because the radio range between aircraft at high altitude is so great, it's often possible to speak to other aircraft to see how far geographically the turbulence extends. I'm sure that you often ask yourself the question about why the seatbelt signs are put on in turbulence. It's not because the aircraft is in any danger. It's to make sure that you're in your seat. That is to make sure you're not standing. Anyone who's travelled on an underground train, like the Metro or the Tube in London, will know how much more comfortable it is to be seated rather than to be on your feet trying to hang on while the train is being bounced around. The chimes that accompany the seatbelt signs are a signal to the cabin crew to stop their in-flight service and stow all their bar trolleys. Sometimes the cabin crew will be able to continue some of their cabin services, depending upon the level and duration of the turbulence. But increasingly, the thoughts of litigation from passengers or from the crew towards their employers means that the service is suspended. When the captain considers that the turbulence is over, he or she will turn off the seatbelt signs and allow normal service to continue. Incidentally, this is why airlines suggest that you have your seatbelt on at all times when seated, because if the flight encounters turbulence and you happen to be asleep, the crew doesn't have to wake you. Now it's time to answer the question, what can you do about turbulence to make it more comfortable? To an extent, I suppose, the answer is nothing. For example, you can't choose a flight or a destination or a time of the year to travel that will avoid turbulence. What you can change, of course, is the way you perceive turbulence. For example, you should never consider it dangerous. As long as you have your seatbelt on, you'll be fine. Remember, too, that the plane rarely changes height more than 10 feet or so up and down, although if you're anxious, you'll think it's thousands. Remember, too, that we notice falling feelings more than the climbing ones. Going up in a lift is always more comfortable, at least to begin with, than going down in a lift, because we associate going down with a certain amount of danger. I suppose that's been programmed into us from the times we've fallen over or fallen off something when we were young. Remember, too, that the plane is built to withstand the forces way beyond those you will ever encounter in flight. Remember also that it's not difficult to fly the plane in turbulence. And finally, remember that despite what you feel, the plane is not dropping thousands of feet. You are not in any danger during turbulence. Turbulence is uncomfortable, but that's not the same as dangerous. That's the end of the scripted part, but I can't help feeling there's something missing, so I want to add just a few points that didn't fit easily into the previous parts. Firstly, clear air turbulence. CAT is no different from any other turbulence from your point of view. The expression clear air means that there's no visible reason that the air is turbulent, like clouds or mountains, and it's caused, as I said, and as I explained at the very beginning, by air masses colliding with each other. It's no better or worse than any other sort of turbulence. Secondly, from my point of view as a pilot, when I check in for a flight, I get a specialized weather map called the Significant Weather Chart. It shows me, among many other things, where the areas of turbulence are and are forecast to be, so that if necessary, I can plan a route to avoid them. It shows the height at which they will occur so that I can adjust the rate of climb to avoid them as well. I pass this information on to the cabin crew, who can plan their in-flight service around the times that we're likely to be in turbulence. Third point. When the wind is strong, it's likely that obstructions on the ground will cause the air to rise up over the buildings and hills and swirl around. I explained that earlier when I was talking about gusty winds in towns, and explained that it happened over mountains too. If this is the cause of turbulence, then it's likely that as the aircraft climbs, the flight will become less bumpy. And while using the word bumpy, when you think about turbulence in future, try to describe it in unemotive language. Say gustiness, bumpy, rough air, bubbly, or call it annoyance. Certainly try to avoid the turbulence word and all that you now associate with the word. It'll be useful to try to change your perception of the word. Fourth point. Keep a glass of water on your tray in flight so that when you do go into turbulence, you can observe how much the water actually moves in the glass. You will, I can guarantee, be amazed at how little the water moves in your glass. And now to finish, I'm going to read a part of the description about turbulence from my book. The question in the book is, why do I feel so unsafe during turbulence? And here's the answer that I give. A simple question with a long answer, I'm sorry to say. A few explanations first. There are six main feelings or sensations connected with turbulence. Up and down, backwards and forwards, heaving, and going sideways. And I'll deal with each of them in turn. Up and down. Which feeling do you prefer, going up or going down? In a lift, elevator to my American readers, although we get a heavy feeling when the lift starts off to go, it's still a better feeling than that awful one we get as the lift slows down to stop at a higher floor. What's happening is that you keep on going up and the lift slows down. That's why you feel as if you're actually coming off the floor. Even though you are still going up, you actually get a feeling of falling. The strange thing is that you get the same feeling when a lift starts to go down. You stay where you are, and the lift falls away from you until you start falling and catch it up. Whether you are slowing down from going up, or speeding up before going down, the feeling is the same. During turbulence, the aircraft is going up and down just like the lift, but over a much shorter time and a much smaller height. What you don't know is whether the next movement is up or down, so you don't have the chance to prepare. You don't know what the next feeling will be. It's worth remembering that we associate a feeling of falling with danger. Few people hurt themselves jumping up and hitting their heads on the branch of a tree, but many of us have hurt ourselves falling from a tree. In turbulence, the aircraft is alternately going up and down. Well, strictly speaking, it might be doing two small ups and one big down, or two small downs and a big up. Whatever it does, it certainly doesn't feel normal. What's more, you have no control over it, so it doesn't feel safe either. Backwards and forwards. Which do you prefer to do in a car? Accelerate quickly or brake sharply? A car salesman will tell you enthusiastically that a car will reach 60 miles an hour in 6.8 seconds, but he won't tell you that it'll stop from that speed in 4.6 seconds, even though it's a much more impressive figure. We associate slowing down with danger because we assume that something must be impeding our progress. Slowing down is an uncomfortable feeling compared with going faster. In turbulence, the aircraft is in gusty conditions. When the aircraft encounters a gust, which will last 1 or 2 seconds, it slows down very slightly, and you feel this as being thrown forward in your seat. Heave. I wonder if you're familiar with that awful feeling called heave. It's a feeling well known to anyone who's been on a boat or sails, or who has been tipped out of a chair. It's the feeling where you go up, forward, and over. If you think about a small boat going up one side of a wave, then just before it comes down on the other side, it tips forward and is thrown forward as well. That's what heave is. Going sideways. Going round a corner with someone who drives too fast is another uncomfortable feeling. You get thrown from one side of the seat to the other. Because your head is heavy and can pivot easily on your shoulders, it moves more quickly and further than your body, so you become giddy as well. Now combine going up and down, forwards and backwards, side to side, and heaving in a very short period of time, and keep those movements going for more than a few minutes, and what do you have? You have turbulence. tighten your seatbelt, and remind yourself that whatever it feels like to you, it isn't dangerous as long as you are securely fastened in your seat. That's the end now of this Helpcast on turbulence. I hope it has been of help to you. Thank you very much for listening, and we look forward to meeting you again on another Helpcast.